Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're taking a pretty dark journey back to the late 1970s. We're digging into a piece of American roadside folklore, the legend of Martha Pump and her, well, her special blend gas.
Yeah, this one's definitely unsettling. It sits right at that intersection of local legend and maybe something more systemic. We're piecing it together from narrative accounts, you know, the basic legend, that story time audio file, but also filtering it through the analytical lens of the Inspector Story Podcast Series Index.
Right. So our goal here isn't just to retell the spooky story. We want to unpack why it resonates. What was the actual deception? How did this system she supposedly had, how did it even work? And what bigger themes like erasure does it tap into?
Exactly. And you really have to start with the setup, the context. Late 70s, Highway 19, Redwater, Texas. Think oil crisis, high gas prices everywhere. People were desperate.
So Martha's station pops up offering cheaper gas. The legend pegs it at $10 a gallon, which sounds high now, but maybe signified premium or something unique back then.
It's a weird detail, the $10. But the core idea is it was presented as a better value. Salvation, almost, for truckers watching every penny. But the chilling part, the hook of the story, is that the real cost, well, it was much, much higher.
Okay, let's paint the picture then. What was the appeal? Why stop there specifically? It wasn't just price, right?
Oh, no, not just price. It was the whole environment. You have to remember the backdrop. Scarcity, long lines at other stations, real anxiety about running out of fuel. Martha's place was designed as an oasis from all that.
So like a classic roadside stop.
Kind of, but amplified. The sources describe that heat shimmering off the asphalt, you know, Texas heat, maybe the smell of dust. But then the contrast, coffee steam rising off a cold truck hood. It felt welcoming.
And Martha herself?
The perfect proprietor, according to legend. Always smiling, super polite. Importantly, she never seemed rushed. She gave drivers a moment to breathe, which was rare.
That feels deliberate, making it personal.
Oh, absolutely calculated. It wasn't just a friendly face. It was service. Offering coffee, wiping down the windshield with a squeegee. Small things, physical connections that built trust. She wasn't just selling gas. She was selling reliability, maybe even a bit of care.
Okay, but back to the gas itself. The special blend. That was the real draw, wasn't it?
That was the core of it. It wasn't just cheaper or perceived as better value. It apparently worked differently. Truckers, long-haul drivers, they swore by it. Their tanks seemed to last way longer after filling up at Martha's.
Ah, so it's not just saving money up front. It's efficiency, better mileage. In a fuel crisis, that's gold.
Exactly. That's the genius of the trap, if you look at it that way. It solved the two biggest problems, cost and range. It convinced people the system was actually benefiting them in a huge way.
The perfect lure, tailored to the exact anxieties of the time. Get them hooked on the results.
Right. And once they believed in that blend, they were kind of already caught. And part of that routine, part of that friendly interaction, was this one question she always asked.
Delivered with the smile, I assume.
Always with the smile. It sounded innocent enough, just small talk.
What was the line?
Heading far tonight.
Okay, yeah, that sounds like normal chat at a gas station, asking about the trip.
On the surface, yes. But if we look at it through the lens of, like, hidden motives or patterns in these kinds of stories, especially from our index work, routine questions can be filters.
A filter for what? How does that work?
Well, think about it. Heading far tonight. It's not really about where they're going. It's about whether they're likely to come back soon. Are they local? Or are they transient? Passing through, maybe unlikely to be missed quickly if they don't make the return trip.
Ah, I see. It establishes if they're just passing through, essentially. A potential resource that won't leave an immediate hole in the local community.
Precisely. It's gauging the likelihood of erasure, in a way. Confirming they wouldn't be looping back through Redwater anytime soon. That friendly question might have been the first step in a very dark process.
Okay, so that's where things start to turn. The friendly question becomes ominous in hindsight. How did the pattern actually get noticed?
It was the locals, the people who didn't get asked that question, or who just used the station regularly. They started piecing it together. Simple observation, really.
They noticed people weren't coming back.
Exactly. The people Martha asked, heading far tonight, they just never seemed to pass back through Redwater on their return journeys. It wasn't random. It seemed tied directly to that interaction. The absence became noticeable. It shifted from coincidence to a chilling pattern.
And that leads to the next big problem, the logistical one, the pumps themselves.
Yes, the perpetual pump mystery. Around 1978, according to the timeline and the sources, this is where it moves beyond just disappearances and into something physically impossible.
Because a gas station needs gas deliveries.
Constantly. especially a busy one on a highway. You've got underground tanks, logs, regulations. Tanker trucks have to come and refill those tanks. It's a visible, regulated process.
But not at Martha's.
That's the core anomaly. The reports say her pumps never ran dry. She was selling this amazing special blend constantly.
Yeah.
No one ever saw a fuel delivery truck. She never called for one.
So, where is the gas coming from? That doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't in any normal commercial way.
Yeah.
It implies the system wasn't drawing from an external supply chain. It had to be getting its input from somewhere else, internally.
Which, given the disappearing customers...
The implication is unavoidable. The system was somehow self-fueling, using the very people it lured in.
How does something like that fit into the frameworks we look at in the index? This idea of a system running on impossible logic.
It's a prime example of what we call hidden protocols, or a false system. It reminds me a lot of the analysis we did on the Disney World controlled zone theme.
Refresh my memory on that one.
The idea there is that really intense visible control on the surface, perfect landscaping, constant service, everything looking right, can actually mask a completely broken or hidden system underneath. Martha's friendly service, the cheap gas promise, the clean windshield, that was the surface control.
Blinding people to the fact that the basic logistics getting fuel delivered were completely absent.
Exactly. Control hiding in plain sight. She operated by denying the basic need for external commerce, creating this terrifyingly self-contained loop. The lack of delivery records versus the reality of full pumps, that's the tension that eventually forces someone to look closer.
Which is what happened next, right? Someone did look closer.
Yeah, driven by the disappearances and this logistical weirdness, a neighbor apparently made an unannounced visit. And the first thing that hit them wasn't visual, it was sensory. The smell.
Inside the garage, what did it smell like?
The air was described as heavy. Not just dusty or oily. Heavy with a distinct mix. Bleach and gasoline.
Whoa. Okay, bleach. That's not normal for a garage. Gasoline, yes, but bleach suggests cleaning, right? Or maybe something more.
Disinfecting. Concealing. Processing, perhaps. Especially mixed with the smell of the product itself, the gasoline. It strongly hints at a cleanup process being integral to whatever was happening in there.
And Martha's explanation.
Classic Martha, according to the story.
Huh?
Calm, yeah. Polite. Dismiss it as just a deep clean...
But the combination, bleach and gasoline, it feels like trying to erase something. Not just dirt, but maybe the remnants of the input.
That's the unavoidable conclusion analytically. She wasn't just cleaning the building. She seemed to be cleaning the process, trying to mask the source of her special blend.
So the neighbor leaves uneasy, but the official investigation follows soon after.
Right. The suspicion was concrete enough now. And when the police came, the sources say Martha had clearly tried to sanitize everything visually. The garage looked untouched, meticulously normal.
Trying to keep up the illusion right to the end, but they found something.
They did. Despite the surface tidiness, two things gave the game away. Physical evidence that couldn't be easily hidden or explained away.
What were they?
First, the floor drain. It apparently reeked of iron.
Iron, like blood.
That's the immediate visceral connection the sources imply. In a garage, that smell is jarring. It points away from simple mechanics and towards something organic and messy. That drain suggests where the waste products of her process were going.
Okay, that's grim. What was the second thing?
Along the back wall, there were rows of old motor oil cans. Seemed normal enough, maybe just stored empties.
Until
someone moved them, they sloshed thickly. Not like leftover oil. Something heavier, more viscous.
Ugh. So you've got the smell of iron from the drain and the sound of thick sloshing from these cans. That paints a really disturbing picture.
It makes the horror tangible, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It moves from rumor to physical reality. And these elements, the drain and the cans, they become the artifacts that testify when Martha stays silent. This ties into a concept from the index, something we call the echoing Buzz Lightyear principle.
Echoing Buzz Lightyear. Explain that one.
The idea is artifacts outlive their makers. Like Buzz Lightyear's detached arm in Toy Story still functioning, the physical remnants of a crime or a system often persist even after the perpetrator tries to erase the evidence or maintain an illusion. Martha focused on the visual tidiness, the smile, the records.
But she couldn't completely erase the physical byproducts, the smell, the sloshing liquid in the cans.
Exactly. Those artifacts remained, testifying to the hidden reality of her fuel production. The sheer volume probably made complete concealment impossible over time.
So the police are there. They smell the iron. They hear the sloshing. They confront her.
This is the climax of the legend. They ask her directly, what is in those cans?
And her response, still smiling.
Still smiling. And she gives just one word, a word that's horrifyingly accurate within her twisted system.
What did she say?
Fuel.
Wow, just fuel.
Yeah, it's devastatingly simple. She's not technically lying, is she? In her closed-loop system, that is the fuel. It forces everyone, including us listening now, to confront the horrific reality of her supply chain. It confirms the entire monstrous cycle.
The customer becomes the product, literally, turned into fuel.
That's the horrifying logic she operated under, efficient in its own grotesque way.
So after that revelation, how did the story spread? What was the immediate fallout?
It became instant highway legend. Truckers, especially, latched onto it. They understood the pressure for cheap fuel, the lure of that station, the story of the special blend, the iron smell, the sloshing cans. It spread like wildfire through truck stops and CB radios.
So the station itself became infamous.
Absolutely. It went from a welcome sight to a place of warning, a permanent fixture in the dark folklore of Highway 19 and Redwater, a cautionary tale. Don't trust deals that seem too good to be true, especially on a lonely highway.
It makes sense why it stuck around. But let's zoom out again, like you said. How does Martha Pump fit into the bigger picture, the broader archetypes we see in the index?
She embodies a couple of key themes really powerfully. The first one we touched on is erasure as evidence.
Meaning the lack of something is the proof?
Precisely. The fact her victims vanished completely, no return traffic, no records, that was the evidence. Her system's efficiency in making people disappear was, ironically, what signaled the crime was happening.
You mentioned this connects to other cases in the index, like Klaus Richter.
Yeah, the parallel with Richter, the soldier erased from the records, is strong. For Richter, the erasure itself became the evidence of a cover-up. Same with Martha. Her victims were erased to become fuel, and their absence screamed louder than any paper trail could. Its erasure is the mechanism and the proof.
And what about the real Wendy file connection?
That file explores how official records can get stuck, frozen, while reality moves on, often violently. Think about Martha's logbooks showing no fuel deliveries. They were static, unchanging.
While people were actively disappearing and being processed.
Right. The frozen record contrasted sharply with the grim reality. The lives weren't just moving on, they were ending to fuel the system the records ignored. Her meticulous erasure created a discrepancy the logbooks couldn't hide indefinitely.
Okay, that makes sense. What's the second major theme?
The false game or trap. This is crucial. Martha's station wasn't just a business. It was a lure, a trap disguised as a solution.
It promised value, cheap, efficient gas, but the actual outcome was destruction.
Exactly. The system was designed to consume the user, not serve them. The attractive price, the amazing mileage that was just the bait to get people into the system.
Like that concept from the monopoly analysis in the index?
Spot on. The game trains you before it pays you. Martha trained drivers to trust her, trust the fuel, trust the value proposition. She got them used to the benefit.
Before collecting the real price.
Which wasn't money. It links right into the Aladdin theme, too. The treasure is usually a trap, the special blend, the savings, that was the glittering treasure in the cave. But reaching for it, trusting it, activated the trap. Her whole operation was a facade to funnel victims into that consumption cycle.
It really reframes that initial question she asked, doesn't it? Heading far tonight.
Completely. Thinking about it now, knowing the whole supposed system, it stops sounding like friendly chatter.
It sounds like confirmation.
Or even an admission in a way, a ritualistic step. Was she really asking? Or was she stating her intention, confirming they fit the profile for her system, verifying they were on that one-way trajectory? The kindness becomes the most sinister part, the mask for the routine.
Okay, so wrapping this up, this dive into Martha Pump has been, well, pretty chilling. We've seen the deceptive setup exploiting real anxieties, the grim physical evidence, and how it connects to these bigger ideas of erasure and systemic traps from our index files.
The key takeaway, really, is how dangerous systems can be when they present themselves as the perfect solution to an urgent problem. Martha offered cheap, efficient fuel during a crisis. The promise was salvation, the reality was consumption.
And the legend lives on because of those stark images the sources preserve.
Definitely. That picture of the station, the price on the board, the pump counter ticking away.
But never needing a refill from a tanker truck.
Because the supply was internal. Monstrously self-sufficient.
The story ends, as the legend goes. The pumps kept ticking, the highway kept moving. And in Redwater, they still say the cheapest gallon was the one you never should have bought.
Which leaves you, the listener, with something to think about. Martha Pump is an extreme folkloric example, but think about the systems in your life, What promises you the lowest cost, the fastest service, the easiest solution? What looks like incredible value on the surface? Always ask. What's the hidden cost? Is there an invisible price being paid, maybe by you, maybe by someone else? Always question the systems where the math seems just a little too perfect.